Climate change tends to make the news pretty regularly. Last week, the topic was central to Pope Francis's visit to the United States and his message to Congress. Despite the coverage, though, many believe too little is being done to curb emissions and slow global warming trends. Others dismiss concerns with equal conviction.
A program in far northern Wisconsin along Lake Superior is trying to cultivate education. Called GWOW, the model not only integrates scientific climate change research, but a glimpse of how Lake Superior's coastal environment, people, cultures, and economies stand to be impacted by climate change.
WUWM's Susan Benz reports.
The name of the four-day experiential teacher's training has Ojibwe roots. If only I could pronounce it properly. It's probably best I just share its translation, guiding for tomorrow. Neil Hauk helped get the GWOW ball rolling. As Assistant Chief of Interpretation and Education with the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore, Hauk hooked on to the initial opportunity.
Back in around 2010, 2011, the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative was passed, and so there was a chunk of money that was available in order to do a lot of different restoration activities around the Great Lakes region that included education, and curriculum development and service projects on all kinds of coastal-related projects. And so we tied climate change into that.
Hauk got to work with other Lake Superior advocates and stakeholders, including the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission, and UW Extension. They created an interactive exhibit that came to life at the Northern Great Lakes Visitor Center. Then Hauk learned about another pot of money that might expand the group's impact.
We learned that the National Park Foundation had a grant opportunity starting in 2012. It was called the Parks Climate Challenge Grant. And it was to bring teachers together in a workshop in order to incorporate the climate change into their curriculum and to encourage their students to do service learning projects relating to climate change. And so we wrote a proposal for the National Park Foundation. We were fortunate to be one of eight parks in the United States that was selected in 2012 to participate in the program.
Hauk believes their application rose to the top because
we already had this partnership going because of the exhibit and the curriculum, which is part of what made our application so strong. And the fact that we were developing this connection between climate change and culture, which was unique among the people, the other parks that were applying for this, for the grant.
GWOW offers participants up-close glimpses of Ojibwe cultures, the Bad River and Red Cliff bands, their close connection culturally and economically to the region's water, land, and wildlife.
So we were successful in 2012. We had a great turnout. We had 25 teachers that showed up. We had a wonderful experience. We applied for the grant again in 2013. There wasn't as much money available in 2013. Only three parks were funded, and ours was one of them. And it was, again, the strength of our partnership and the involvement of the connection between climate change and culture that made our application so attractive to the National Park Foundation.
And GWOW continues. Each summer since 2012, approximately 25 educators from Wisconsin and a few beyond its borders have streamed in for 4 days of intensive hands-on education. Hauk believes its growing ripple effect can make a difference environmentally, and he hopes for the Apostle Islands he helps to steward.
The National Park Service, climate change has been acknowledged as, you know, a severe threat to the park resources. And, you know, national parks are involved in looking at the science and figuring out how we can mitigate our impacts and what kind of ways we can adapt our infrastructure or park resources in order to figure out how to react to climate change. But it's also about communication and education and letting people know what kind of impacts we're having and what we're seeing with these resources. You know, people really make strong connections with the park, and a lot of times, you know, we hope that they fall in love with these places. And if we can point out some of the things that we are seeing, some of the changes that are taking place, people will become concerned and want to do whatever they can in order to help protect the thing that they love. And that's what we're trying to nurture with this institute, is to help spread this word, not just, you know, to these teachers, but to all of their students and the other students in their schools, because a lot of what these folks are doing are service projects that are communicating these impacts with the other folks, you know, that the parents and the other folks in the schools where they're coming from. And that's the exciting part of the Institute is, you know, if people don't care about something, they're not going to care for it. And not only are we helping people to learn more about the Apostle Islands and the fact that they're here, but that they may not be here in this condition in perpetuity unless we take some action.
Hauk says sharing the magic of the 21 islands works best when you're standing on one. GWOW participants board a double-decker cruise vessel.
So we had Manitou Island off there to the left, and then a little bit closer and further to the north, we're seeing the main mass of Stockton Island. That is our destination today. Stockton Island is the second largest of all the Apostle Islands. It's 7 miles long and about 3 miles wide, a little bit more than 10,000 acres. We'll be going to an area that's the southern point, the southern tip of Stockton Island, a place that we call Presque Isle. We'll be talking a little bit more about that when we get out to the island.
Stockton Island is home to a range of ecosystems, from bog to savanna and pine forest. Hauk points to changes he's seen over his 30-year career, including the decline of paper birch trees.
Anybody see paper birch around here?
Mm-hmm. A few.
Yeah, we got one here, we got one over here. Actually, I think this is a yellow birch, but there's another paper birch over here.
Stump.
Kind of a difference between paper birch and yellow birch. You can see on the paper birch that the peeling bark tends to be in really large chunks. And on yellow birch, the fragments seem to be a lot narrower, a lot thinner. But paper birch is a big loser. 1988 was a summer of tremendous heat and drought. And shortly after that summer, we started seeing a lot of die-off among the paper birch in forests around here. And somebody was mentioning the other day about the birch borer. Someone was asking about that the other. Yeah, after these drought years, it made the trees weakened and made them susceptible to insect pests. And so quite often when you come to a stand of paper birch trees around here, half of them are dead. You know, you look up in the tops, and the tops are just gone. And as you drive up the north shore of Minnesota, you see the same thing time after time. A lot of the stands of paper birch are dead and dying. So this is one of the examples of how we're seeing change in the forest already related to warming and drying of climates. Follow me.
We meander the short fourth of a mile shaded trail, ferns below, trees above, to Julian Beach. Slip off your walking shoes and its sands sing under your feet.
We got a great example here of what small changes in lake level can do. The lake is about 12 to 13 inches higher right now than it was at this time last year. And so that much of a difference eliminated half of our beach here, basically at Julian Bay. The beach is a lot narrower and it's a lot steeper than it was. But again, the long-term trend is for lower lake levels and bigger beach. This is an example of what we'll be dealing with over the next 10, 15, 20 years. As lake levels, they keep going up, or if they go down, it makes that difference not only at our docks and our infrastructure, but also makes a big difference at our beaches. Are they big? Are they small? Are they there at all?
Parks invasive species specialist Michael Joyner breaks the spell and creates another.
The idea of this institute is to teach people who teach other people. So that's where we're opening the door now. So start thinking about how to spread this word. Wow, that's big. And that's an important concept to take all of this that you've just been given, all this science, all this stuff, all this climate change is happening. Right? We know that. What does that mean and what can we do about it?
Joyner pulls the educators into a circle and creates a web of life. He threads yarn magically through their fingers, sort of a super-sized dream catcher.
And that's what I'm asking you to do. Grab and hold. Because that's what is going to help us through this. We're going to weave ourselves together because that's what we're seeing in the world. The world is connected in more ways than we can really define.
No problem until Joyner places a shallow dish of water in the web's center and slowly begins to snip at the threads of the web. Each cut represents stresses to our ecosystems.
I mean, you're still holding, but you never know where that really will sever. Is it going to be some of these species that we talked about? Is it going to be any of these things that we talked about, or is it not?
A sixth grade science teacher from Wausau, Peter Schmidt, was so wowed by GWOW, he came back a second summer as a mentor.
This is going to be my 30th year of teaching. And if I were to pick a single most important science topic, it is this. And it's good to see something so important in a model like this that has that effect in the classroom and beyond. I'll talk other people into it next summer. So.
Yeah.
Schmidt's students spent a year investigating their own environment, including conducting a comprehensive energy audit of their school. They presented their findings, the good and the bad, at open houses and parent-teacher conferences. Schmidt then brought a group of his students to experience some of the GWOW curriculum, including a day on Stockton Island.
This was the culmination of their year-long work of the geology, ecology, and meteorology work that they did. This was where it all came together. And they knew the things. Like, I mean, they sat when Neil gave his talk at the headquarters. They knew about it already. They were there taking notes. They had their sketchbooks. They're the ones that make the difference. They really go home and they share it with their families and their classmates back at school. So that was probably the single most important thing.
You can't get closer to GWOW than participant Joni Chapman. She teaches art at an elementary school in Ashland.
The thing that just really hit me was how much information is out there that's just not factually correct about climate change. You know, it's something that I think about, but I hadn't really put it together how much inaccurate stuff is available for people until I started looking at what the actual facts are. So the course really opened my mind to what was really going on.
But Chapman grappled with how she could convey that information to her students. She only spends one class period a week with each of her kindergarten through fifth graders, and they are young kids. Chapman started with her second, fourth, and fifth graders and took on an accessible topic, birds.
They had the choice of doing writing a research paper, and they all did paintings in the second grade, that is. They all did paintings of their birds. They were also asked to come up with a board that they put everything on and then actually presented to their class the findings that they had from their research. Then they also learned the bird call from that particular bird.
Kids who wish to competed in an Audubon Society bird calling contest. Chapman is finding her artistic weaving of climate change curriculum works for young students.
Elementary school kids don't necessarily understand all the details, but they understand that sometimes change is not so great. And they are interested in knowing how our world is operating. So incorporating preservation of the environment into the curriculum, I think, is vitally important, and that's something that I haven't necessarily done before.
Apostle Islands National Lakeshore's Neil Houck says GWOW continues to bear fruit. The team just hosted a two-day coastal climate camp for 136 6th through 8th graders from Marathon County. And yes, GWOW 2016 is in the works. For Lake Effect, I'm Susan Bentz.
You'll find more about GWOW at wuwm.com, including photos teachers shared of their students' interpretations of climate change.